Today's guest on the podcast is Pip Johnson of Ordima Spirits. We go in depth on the practicalities of setting up the brand. We taste three of their spirits and look ahead to the rest of the year. Enjoy.
So I definitely fell into this job by accident. It was a very happy accident. I, like most people, grew up drinking gin and probably not liking it that much, stealing it out of your grandma's cabinet at the age of far too young. And I grew up and spent most of my working career in hospitality and retail management. So quite poles apart from what I do now. And I hated it, and I wanted an out. I wanted to do something different. And I had a very happy accidental opportunity, bumping into someone from who I knew from the hospitality industry. And they gave me the opportunity to come and work with them. And they were a brand consultancy and just starting up. So it was all nice and niche and unique and small. And the first product and the first person that I met was my now colleague Ian and Pink Pepper Gin, and I fell in love with both. Ian is an absolutely fantastic guy and the gin is phenomenal. So I kind of thought, hold on a minute, this is quite a good gig. And that's how, that was about 3 years ago now. So that's how I very happily fell into this gin business. Okay, so Ordimus is a three-person company. It was our distiller, Miko. It was his brainchild. And a very long story short, which I'm sure we will divulge into, but a long story short is he met his now business partner, Ian, who was also living in Cognac. And I get the Clapham area of the world. It's not quite as glamorous as Cognac, but so there's three of us split over France and the UK, and we do everything ourselves and try and spread the message of gin between us.
Yeah, I just want to take you back a bit to those early days, because I think it's fascinating, the start of things. I'm getting into more restaurant openings and, you know, new drinks brands and new areas. So when you first came across them, did they already have a plan about how they wanted to, like, get into the London market, being as they were based over in Cognac?
Yes and no, I think probably best describes that. And that not in a detriment to Ian and Miko at all. This venture was very, very new to both of them. And it was actually, again, quite accidental. Pink Pepper Gin was born into the market slightly backwards. It was never, Miko, our distiller, never actually wanted to have a product in the market. So he originally made Pink Pepper Gin as a showcase to what he could do and to the types of products that he could make, as Ordima Spirits is actually a bespoke spirits making company. And everyone said, but we actually really like that one. Can we have that? Can we have Pink Pepper Gin? And he had to then rethink everything. And I think, I'm sure you're obviously well aware, to do anything and to launch a new product into the market, you have to be fairly straight and strict, and Miko's slightly more like a creative butterfly, so not necessarily the best combination for launching a product. And so when he met Ian, Ian is a doer, Ian's director of doing in the company, so the two of them together really put the gin out there. And then it's been, in the nicest sense, trial and error ever since. We're in a really lovely, privileged position of being able to work with lovely people, and picking the people who are going to really enjoy the gin and enjoy our products as much as we do, and get the most out of the products. And that's always been our ethos. So that's why I say yes and no. Obviously, there was a plan of roughly where to go and what to do, but it's very hit and miss. Of you have to keep reanalyzing, reassessing, and saying, okay, that didn't work. Now, what can we do here? That was great, or that was awful. Let's not do that again.
And I think that's actually where sometimes the kind of butterfly approach, as you put it, can actually be better even than the kind of we're going to sit down and we're going to analyze and we're going to have tons of data and everything's going to be very, you know, market driven. It's like, you know, now I think nowadays you just have to realize that people get their information from so many different sources and people make buying decisions. You know, it's so difficult, I think, to track how it comes from. So sometimes a butterfly approach is absolutely the right way to go, and it can be more successful. So 14 months with the brand, looking back now on all that trial and error and successes, I guess, that you've had along the way, you know, what are maybe one or two of the things that have worked for you and you would kind of do more of if you had to move into a new market or you had to sort of, you know, go deeper into a new sector in London?
I think looking back over the 14 months, it's definitely about building relationships. Is probably the absolute key. It doesn't matter whether that is in a five-star hotel or a pub that's just down the road. It's about building relationships with retail. We work very closely with John Lewis and Waitrose, and they're absolutely fantastic and are really, really behind our brand now because of the relationships that we've built with them. So it's and certain bars and restaurants are across the UK. So it definitely a real probably key point for us would be relationship building. So that's something that I would take to any new market that we would look to go into. So I think it's probably a good idea for us to try the range from Ordemus. It would probably be rude not to. So we've got three products for you to try today. Our flagship product, Pink Pepper Gin. So this was the one that I said was accidentally born into the market, which has allowed us to then have fun and play with other creative spirits. The second one is a really beautiful yet odd beast called Umami, which is a savory spirit. So not quite a vodka, not quite an eau de vie. It's sitting right in the middle. And the last one is our latest release, which is called Covert, and it's a liqueur. It's a cognac-based liqueur. So three very different products from each other, and we can taste them all and see what you think. So we're going to do two stages of tasting. Firstly, neat on its own, and then we will add a cube of ice to see the difference that it makes, which will showcase some of the techniques that we use in the gin making. So Pink Pepper Gin is, or everything that we do, is made using a glass still. So we use vacuum distillation to make all of our products. And please be aware that, as I touched on earlier, we are a three-man band, and everything is made in our distiller's living room. So he has two glass stills, a rotovap in the corner, loads of experiments on the walls, a lot of alcohol bottles, and a sofa. So it's a very, very fun and creative setup. He wakes up in the morning, he puts his espresso machine on, and he shuffles in to, you know, play around with the still and whatever he's left distilling the night before. Which is probably quite a dream job. And so everything is using vacuum distillation. And the beauty of that is it just allows you to really pinpoint flavors and take flavors that you want out of a product. So in Pink Pepper Gin, we've got 9 botanicals. On the nose, you have the spice that hits you first. You have that pink pepper. You have that black cardamom. That's what's jumping out when it's neat and at room temperature. The body of the gin, we unhelpfully keep a couple of the ingredients secret. And obviously juniper's in there as well. So the body of the gin is juniper and a couple of secret ingredients. And then the tail, the finish of the gin, is what we call the patisserie notes. So there's vanilla, there's tonka bean, and honey. So the flavor profile that you'll go through is having those lovely, rich, spicy high notes that then finish off into softer, warmer patisserie notes of vanilla, the tonka, and the honey.
Should we try? Yeah, I'll freely admit, you know, there are probably, you know, quality gin has not really been a thing in my life, you know, and I think every gin I've ever had, you'd want to, you know, mix it. And but it's so complex. I mean, I'm guessing that my training with the wine tasting is helping, but you know, I'm getting all of those things, and that what I want to say is journey from the nose, from the initial impact. It's interesting. It's not feeling too hot either. I thought it might feel quite hot to have it neat like this, but then, as you know, even still now, there's a very, you know, it's still getting, yeah, quite botanical. I got more of the patisserie notes just immediately after tasting, but the thing that persists for me now is more the herbal notes. It's a really nice finish.
Yeah, pink pepper gin is it's a complex beast. As you said, there are plenty of gins out there that you probably wouldn't necessarily want to drink on their own. Some do resemble paint stripper, and some are absolutely fantastic. And this one is slightly more on the side of being a sipping gin. So that's what it was designed to be. So you can have it just on its own. You can treat it a bit like a whiskey. And that's where, when we add some ice into it, you'll see the difference and the evolution of flavours. But it has a very long finish to it. It has all of those flavours just keep going, and they move around your mouth. And one of those reasons is, I don't know how much you know about gin, but generally speaking, your four typical botanicals in gin will be citrus, some form of citrus, coriander, angelica, and orris root. And the reason of having angelica and orris root is it binds everything together. It acts a bit like gin glue. And we've specifically chosen not to use those. So it's a really playful gin, and it'll be slightly different depending on how long you leave it in the glass for, like this, or depending on what tonic you put with it, or what mixer, or what cocktail you make with it. So it doesn't just have one set personality. It's really fun in the sense that actually it can showcase different sides of itself depending on what extra character you bring into the game. So now, with adding the ice, this will lower the ABV of the gin, which starts off at 44%. So it's very smooth, but there's a good bit of alcohol in there. And as soon as you start to add the ice in, it will dilute that down. And so all of those essential oils that are in there will come out to play. And you can see it on the surface of the gin. You can smell the difference on the nose as well. So everything's still there, but it's just moved around slightly. And one of the reasons for this is, when we finish the gin, we non-chill filter to keep all of those essential oils in there. It's an interesting one. It splits people, and this is the brilliant thing about the gin. There is no set way that you have to have it. So some people will prefer it on its own, like yourself, prefer it with ice. And some people just aren't that into neat gin, so would rather mix a tonic or a soda with it. It's made in a really, really similar way to a perfume. So we create it by essentially boozy essential oils, and then we piece them together. And then the base spirit, one of the reasons why it's so smooth even at 44% is we take 2 months to reduce the base alcohol down. So from 96-odd%, where it's no use to anyone, to around the mid-40s. And the longer and longer and longer you take to do that, the smoother your spirit's going to be, because you're basically introducing the water and alcohol molecules and saying, right, you go and rest and make friends, and then I'm going to come back in a couple of weeks and I'm going to introduce some more. And then again, you leave them to chill and to be best buddies, and then you get a really smooth spirit at the end. As with anything, you know, time is probably your biggest commodity and biggest expense. And that's what puts us to the premium end of the gin market. You can technically turn a gin around in 24 hours. It may not be a very nice gin, but it's doable. And there are so many gin producers out there who are on a varying level of time frames. We probably take about 2 to 3 months to make a batch of gin. And one of the reasons is the time taken to reduce the base alcohol down. So we then get a really smooth spirit. And then we assemble it all. We then let it rest and then we non-chill filter, let it rest, and then it gets bottled. So it sounds a bit cheesy, but it really is a labor of love. This is Miko doing everything from start to finish, and this is him in a bottle. This is him in a gin form. And next up, we've got umami. So umami, the fifth taste. I think it's the Japanese word for yummy. And it's, I mean, the best way that I describe it is when you eat a piece of Parmesan cheese and the crystals that form on the side of your mouth, where you're like, God, I just want to have another bit. That's umami. And umami came into the market because of a bespoke project that we did a few years ago. And a bar approached Miko and said, can you make us a savory spirit that our bartenders can play around with in savory cocktails? So the creative butterfly went away and came up with umami. And it's made in exactly the same way as pink pepper gin. So same base spirit and the same vacuum distillation, except in this one, there's only one distillation, which is Sicilian capers. So the body of the spirit is savory and salty with a slight citrus note to it. So think capers. And we then add umami-rich flash infusions into it. So one of which is actually Parmesan cheese. So we flash infuse Parmesan cheese into alcohol. So we over and over and over gas it and then push the body of the product and the umami out. So it doesn't taste of cheese. It just has that kind of presence of the Parmesan. And then we do that with a couple of others and then we assemble it again in the same way. And then the difference with this is we let it rest in an old cognac barrel for a few weeks, purely just to round off the edges and soften it slightly. And then for me, that gives it bit of like a dark chocolate vibe, which then takes you out of just the realms of maybe a dirty martini or a Bloody Mary, which are both delicious, but it also puts you into that category of, oh, maybe we can use this in sweet cocktails. Maybe we can do that sweet and savory weird concoction that works on our palates. So it's a very interesting beast. So this is poles apart from pink pepper gin. This is in a whole different ballpark. You've got the one main botanical in this, a Sicilian capers. So that is everything that you are smelling. So all of those umami rich ingredients that we've added aren't for taste and aren't for smell. They're just to add the body of the product in and the umami. This is a savory spirit in its own right. So there's no juniper in this. There's nothing that makes it a gin. It's not quite a vodka. So we've maybe created our own category for this one, which helpful or not. But it's a savory spirit in its own right. But you can treat it like a vodka. You can treat it like a gin. So in cocktail making, you can just add a touch of vermouth to this and you've got an absolutely beautiful dirty martini, or you can then cut it with some vodka or gin. This will so we've added ice into the umami to have that comparison as we did with the gin, and again you've got the slight clouding because it's non-chill filtered, which then allows it to be playful the same as the gin. So it will; those flavours will still be in there, but they'll just be singing a slightly different tune, and it opens the spirit up a lot more. So this one isn't, whereas pink pepper gin can be sipped and enjoyed just as it is or over ice. Of course, you can do it with this, with umami, but we tend to find that it's more people coming in and wanting a cocktail with it, and bartenders having great fun playing around with it. It's an interesting beast. It's really, I will be completely honest, and I always say this, it's very easy to make a rubbish cocktail with it, but when you get it right, you know you've got it right. It just elevates it up to a different level.
Because it's umami, and that's the name and the whole ethos, I guess, behind it, has this to your knowledge, been used in food pairing and people thinking of cocktails that go with food?
Very much so. It's a beautiful ingredient to go alongside food. Interestingly, Ian has used it to cure carpaccio and things like that. We had an awful meeting once where someone said, "Oh, should we have some oysters whilst you're here?" And we said, "Oh yeah, actually, it'll be quite nice." And we dressed oysters with umami, and it was delicious. But we're working with, we've got the PX Festival coming up this year, and we're working with Andrew doing a dessert pairing with all of our spirits, and including umami. So it's a really fun one to pair with food and to start thinking about things like that. And we see a lot of restaurants taking it on for that specific reason. So this one is Covert Liqueur. This is our newest product to be released. Came out at the start of the year. And the story behind this and its creation, Miko decided that he wanted to make a green spirit. That was his goal. That was his aim. I remember trying a taster of this probably about coming up to 2 years ago. So it's very much been a labor of love and a work in progress. And this is the final, obviously, product out into the market. So the name, varies that we name our things quite simply, but the name Co stands for cognac. It's a cognac-based liqueur. And Vert is green in French. So that's the very shortened version. There's another one which involves probably more time than we have to talk about. But this was his, what he wanted to do, and this is the finished product of the inspiration of a green spirit. So Covert is made of three ingredients. Quite simply, it's a cognac base. The cognac is absolutely beautiful. It's from a place. It's a cognac that's Guillaume Pantereau, which is very, very close to Miko's house. Really nice husband and wife who run that. And we've used the same honey distillate that's in Pink Pepper Gin, and we have also made a fig leaf distillate. So the main flavour in this will be the fig leaf and the cognac. So we've picked fig leaves when they're really small, before the fruit forms on the tree. So all of that jammy, figgy goodness that you normally find in the fruit is then in the leaf. We've then dried them and then roasted them lightly and then distilled them. So you then get levels of flavours that you've got that jammy, figgy goodness, but you've also got tea in there. You've got toasted, nutty, rye, amazing goodness, along with all of the levels of flavours in the cognac. And then you've got that beautiful light honey in there as well. Technically, it's a liqueur. It's sitting at 33%, so it's beautifully balanced between what you might typically expect a liqueur to be and a cognac. So very much on the nose, you get cognac hissing you in a nice way. And then once you taste it, you will get more of the liqueur notes coming through. It's a sweet product. There's a bit of sugar to bind it, but not much. A lot of that sweetness is actually coming from the honey distillate and from the figs, well, the leaves and that figgy goodness that's been managed to capture in the leaf. So it's an interesting one. Again, we'll taste it with the ice, but it changes in the sense it becomes greener. The bitter notes come through when you add the ice into it. So all of that, what we kind of think of as sweetness, will calm down slightly, and the green notes will come forward to play. So in cocktails with this, it's such an interesting product that holds itself up. There's a lot of liqueurs out there, when you use them in cocktails, they will disappear. They just won't be singing as loudly as they were in the glass when you have them on their own. This Covert, it stands out. It sings. It punches its way through, and it's like, I'm here, taste me.
For me, that's of any of them, that's the most pleasurable to smell. I have this phrase that I keep making up phrases. I have a phrase, a 3D nose. where you just put your nose in there and you're just getting so much. And even when before the ice went in there, I got even a slight shift in the smell and something new came through, and just so complex and enjoyable to smell. And really, it loses none of that intrigue, I want to say, when you put the ice in there. It just changes. It's just a different beast, as you call it. But yeah, this is not a beast. This is a lovely lovely to drink. And I'd imagine a lot of creativity can also be unlocked as well by trying to find a place for this in cocktails.
Miko's life revolves around experimenting, and it's always really exciting to see what he brings out next. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a big tank outside his distillery, which has all of the experiments that don't quite go to plan. But the ones that do tend to be the ones that have come out to market, and we've got some interesting things coming up. We've got a new product that will be out later on in the year, which again fits in with our weird and wonderful theme. Isn't really like any other products out there, and will be very much directed at people who we've worked with already, for the relationships that we've built, for them to have a almost like a new toy to play with. And Miko just loves experimenting. I gave him a task of putting parsnips into a spirit or a liqueur a few days ago, and he sent me a very happy message saying, "So I've just bought some parsnips on the way home from the shop. What flavor profile are you looking to get?" And he had a great time. It's what he loves doing. This is the experimentation side. So as I said, his living room is a laboratory, and there's experiments wall to wall. He's distilled mud, he's distilled Marmite. A friend of Ian and Miko's bet that they wouldn't distill the shirt off of Ian's back, so they did. None of obviously these are make their way into the products, but it's, you know, it everything that we do is from, you know, Miko's creativity and his amazing talent and ability to have such a good palate and such a good creative mind. So yeah, I'm very excited this year for new products to be coming up and doing some more collaborations, and being slightly, especially with Pink Pepper Gin, being at more festivals alongside Fever Tree, and really kind of, you know, sharing what we say is sharing the pink pepper love with more people.
And I love that sense of experimentation. And it was something that came up when I interviewed Teresa at Beercraft. And she was talking about some of the, you know, really crazy things that they put into beer. And, you know, so like cheeseburgers and the yeast from one of the brewer's beards went in there. And, you know, I think that one was actually sold. I do just love the idea, and I love what's coming out of these conversations I'm having away from wine, because it does seem that there's a lot of people who are kind of pushing the boundaries. And yeah, you're right, there may be a huge tank outside full of the stuff that doesn't work, but it might take that tank to be full, you know, of the stuff that's gone wrong to get to the one thing that's just going to blow the market apart and just going to kind of change the drinks industry for life. So it's exciting times.
Cool. So, I mean, coming up this year, it's that trial and error thing again that I should probably touch back on. We're going to be doing a few events with Fever Tree, which is great. And they've supported us from the word go, which is lovely to support like an emerging, slightly weird brand, which is lovely. But we've got the PX Plus Food Festival coming up, which I'm super, super excited about. I'd be completely honest, I hadn't heard about it until I was approached. So we're going to be doing a pairing with an absolute genius of a dessert guy, which will be really fun and very experimental and really, really up our street. So stuff like that is... Stuff like that makes me happy. It's really lovely to be able to introduce the spirits to new people and to new markets and to people who've never heard about them before or wouldn't necessarily think to have them in such different and creative ways. So it's, you know, we're always open to collaborations and doing something different. And I've got a a public masterclass coming up at Ronnie Scott's in a couple of months, which will be daunting because there's a lot of people attending, but equally fantastic at the same time. And that's what the, you know, the relationship building that I touched on right at the start has allowed us to do, is do all these fun things and go and meet new people. And so I hope it continues for the rest of the year, and we'll see what happens.
Thank you so much, Pip. It was great sitting down with you. You can find the website and social media for Ordema Spirits below. I'd love to cover other spirits brands in the future. So if you've got somebody in mind for me to cover, please contact me at Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter, and hello@interpretingwine.com. See you next time.